Welcome to the Traveling Black Women Podcast, where we are talking to Black women around the world. I'm your host, Nadine, and I am so excited to take you on a journey with fearless Black women exploring the world. Each episode, we uncover hidden gems, share travel hacks, and hear inspiring stories from incredible travelers who look just like you. So whether you're a seasoned globetrotter or planning your very first adventure, we've got something special for you. So stay tuned and let's dive into today's episode. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Traveling Black Women Podcast. Today, I have a very special guest. Now, y'all, I know you know that we have a wide range of travel guides that we have put out since 2018, and we have a new one coming out this year. So today, I have our newest author, Miss Cameron Kinlow, and she is going to talk a little bit about her experience, her book, and what brought us here. So, Cameron, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you for introducing me, Nadine. And thank you for the opportunity to be able to write and share about, you know, talk about my travel experience. I'm Cameron Kinlow. I'm an education administration professional and a newly found travel writer and author from New York. I'm figuring out my place in both the education world and the travel space, but I've lived abroad in Spain. I've taught English in a small village, and I've traveled across Europe, North Africa, and the Caribbean. Outside of work, I use my platform to share what it's really like to explore the world as a Black woman and how important it is for us to expand into other cultures and see people for who they are, just as well as we want them to see us for who we are. And with that, I've got a Spain travel guide dropping soon to help other people navigate the country with more confidence and culture.
I love that. Love that. You know, it's so interesting because I think one of the coolest things about your guide is actually having to live amongst another family. So I've done all this traveling, but I've never like lived with a family where I did not speak the language. Like I did do like a couple days of a homestay in Ecuador. I went with my school. I was teaching at the time, and that was cool. But they spoke English, you know. And
okay.
I wouldn't say it wasn't like really authentic because it was, right? It was still like being in like a house of people I don't know. But to really be there for a long period of time has to be like a different level of life changing that I haven't experienced yet. So I'm kind of like,
Yes, going into it. It just felt like it felt new. There was so much for me to learn and every day was different. I didn't know the language. I didn't know the people. I didn't know the culture. So it just felt like an endless opportunity. Every day was just, it was an experience, you know, something new. Like when everyone asked me about like, how was I living with people? It's wild. Even now that when I think about living with somebody else, that's crazy.
Right. Because, you know, our culture is so individualistic, right?
Yeah. It's once I lived on my own, I was like, okay, I'm never living with anybody ever again.
Yeah.
So going into a house with two parents and then with children, it was an experience.
Wow. I would imagine. Yeah. All right. So let's jump into this. Spain. Why Spain? What made you choose Spain?
So honestly, Spain wasn't my first choice.
Okay.
I was initially fixated on Japan. They have a really big teaching program. And I was initially very focused on paid programs and specifically paid programs where I could still manage my responsibilities back home, like mm-hmm. my car note, my credit cards, you know, the usual things. So I was looking for a good monthly stipend at first, and Asia has a lot of really great programs. But once I didn't get into those programs, I reconnected with CIEE, which is the program that I taught that I was looking at back in college. And I looked at the soonest start date for whatever program. And the soonest start date was for a Madrid program. I didn't hesitate. I just applied for it. I paid for it. And I don't think I was too nervous about it because I know there's a lot of expats in Madrid. So I was like, okay, I should feel comfortable here. And plus, I knew a little bit of Spanish, you know, not too much. But I was like, all right, I can figure out basic conversational Spanish if I go to Spain. But I actually didn't get into the Madrid program because this program is so popular. I spoke to an advisor and I was so discouraged because I was so ready to just leave. I was so discouraged at the time. And they were like, well, you know, there's another program coming up. This was in October at the time when I was supposed to leave. She's like, well, there's another program coming up where you can leave in April. It's a little bit different. You'll live with the host family. You won't get paid, but you can still go to Spain. So at first I was like, I don't know about that. Like, I was not open to it at all because I still have bills to pay, you know, and I didn't want to live with anybody. I wanted that experience to get my own apartment in Spain and meet people through the program and sort of live with them and for my own community. That's the mindset I had going into it.
Okay.
But then with the volunteer program, it ended up just working out perfectly. Like, there was no wait list. The program fees were, there was basically no program fee compared to the paid program. And they handled the placement. They handled the host family. I got the host family paid for the meals. So there was nothing I really had to do on my end. So I just went with it.
And
it ended up being great.
So what was like your first impression? Like when you got there and was like, all right, I'm in it. I'm in it now. Ain't, there's no turnaround. I'm here.
I think just coming from New York and just so I haven't lived in any other state other than New York. Like my parents born and raised in New York. My family's in New York. So I'm very exposed to the hustle and bustle. Granted, I don't live in the hustle and bustle anymore. I live outside of the city, but my family is born and raised in New York City. So it was a surprise, all of it. I guess going into it, I didn't know what to expect. And when I told people initially that I was going to Spain, people would tell me about their fears about going to Europe as a Black person. And, you know, just it made me feel very on edge going into it.
Okay.
Coming from New York where people mostly mind their business and keep it moving, there was such a level of openness there that sort of felt off-putting. And I think because I'm usually in grind mode in New York, I'm always focused on the next thing. And there I had to be very present and connect and talk. And people were extremely chatty, extremely curious, and genuinely wanted to connect, even though there was a language barrier. So it was difficult at first to adjust to that because I was not used to that. And I feel like when you're like in the US, depending on where you live, like maybe in the South, people are a lot more friendly and open to talking. But in New York, it's kind of like, yeah, you go on about your business and so will I.
It's interesting that you say that because I'm originally from New Jersey and I've been living down here in Georgia for, aside from the years that I lived in Abu Dhabi, what was that, 2006? So almost 20 years. And I remember when I first moved down here and I was teaching at the school and I would come in, go to the teacher's lounge, get my mail out of my little cubby hole, put whatever I need to put in the fridge, get my coffee out of the container. They had like a little communal thing and take my behind to my room. Like, it's not meet and greet time. It's the morning. Like, everybody just, we just be handling our business. We showed up, we clocked in, it's time to go.
Yes.
And people didn't like me. People did not like me. And I am the nicest person ever, but at least I'd like to think so. But they didn't, they were like, you come in here and you don't speak to anyone. And I'm just like, y'all were in the middle of a conversation. Yeah, but you could still say good morning. And I'm like, for what?
Right. But that we don't even realize how much of a difference it makes when you move somewhere else because people are so sociable. But then when you come to the Northeast, people do not want to be bothered. They don't care if you speak to them or not.
But that was their norm. So I could see that. Like, I could see how that would feel like, I don't even know how to navigate this. But
yeah,
after a while, you do get used to it and you do start to expect it even from yourself. Like, hey, y'all, good morning. Hey, morning, you know, but it was something that for me, I didn't think about at all. Like, I would have never thought that someone would have perceived me as rude because I am just kind of like tiptoeing in, handling my business and tiptoeing out. Like in my mind, I'm thinking I'm not being rude because I haven't interrupted your conversation. I haven't made myself like grand and, you know, kind of come into the room and shook things up. I just kind of beep, beep and kept it moving. but it had a whole different connotation.
Mm-hmm. And I think even just another surprise for me was that even them wanting to connect without me speaking fluent Spanish, it really mm-hmm. showed that they were leading with their heart. Like, they still wanted to connect with me, and they still wanted to share their culture and wanted to include me in it in a very authentic way. And I think seeing that, and very early on, it really meant a lot to me. So it made me try harder to like converse and try to speak Spanish and really be in the know instead of showing up as an outsider, because they do want me to be involved. That's sort of how I navigated in that space. And everything was beautiful over there, like so much natural beauty.
Okay.
Coming from a major city, they will knock down all the trees and build anything. So I guess just being able to just go outside and see like these landscapes and see castles, it was just like, wow, this is God's creation for real. Like,
I'm
seeing it in real time. Everything was a surprise. There was nothing that didn't catch me off guard.
So what does that feel like? Like when you're going from a place where you look around and everything is brick city, you know, everything is like, there isn't a whole lot of greenery and nature that really holds you. What did that feel like for you?
I think being able to see all of this natural beauty, it made me realize that life can be slow. Like, it made me be more intentional and pay attention to outdoors. Whereas I know there's no trees, I know there's no landscape in New York, I can just drive and like aimlessly drive. I don't want to say it in a bad way, but like, I can't get lost in the scenery here.
Yeah.
Whereas like there, it's like, wow, like how is this a real thing? You know? So it really slowed me down, but in a good way.
Wow. And then coming back, what was that like?
It was very hard to come back because I was so immersed in the culture. Because I lived with the family and I did the everyday things they did, and they were so drastically different than how it is in the U.S., that's what made it hard.
Okay.
When you're in the U.S., it's normal to show up in your sweatpants and binge watch TV and eat fast food and just stay at home and be a hermit. Like, that's normal here.
Yeah.
Whereas in Europe, it's the complete opposite. Like, I lived in a village where there was no fast food anywhere. So every meal I had for the entire time was cooked. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. When people are walking and socializing, I'm walking up hills through the village and in like 40K steps. So it was very different and very hard. And then I came back where we were transitioning from fall to winter. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize seasonal depression was a thing. Like getting access to vitamin D, it really did affect me. I was going outside. My life was outside for months. And then coming back to New York, where the winters are brutal. It was tough.
Man. And it's interesting because you think about stepping outside your comfort zone, right? And the fears and the hesitations that we have right before we do that. And then you do it. And then this whole world opens up and it's just like, now how do I go backwards, right? How do I fit back in this bubble that used to once be comfortable, but no longer is?
You know, you explained that well, because I think coming back, I just felt uncomfortable. And it was in so many different ways. I would eat the food here and it would make me so sick. Like, I would get acne, you know, like different things which we don't think about when we leave the U.S. and then come back. Everything was affecting me, like the allergies, the food, the weather. Like, I was so sensitive coming back. But I think coming back made me realize what I actually do want out of life.
Okay.
And I want to keep experiencing travel in different cultures. So it sort of solidified that space in my life.
I think that's what's up, because like, I feel the same way when I lived abroad in Abu Dhabi. Now, I didn't have like I still had a pretty westernized life, because, you know, they had like, you know, different areas for teachers and things like that. But then there was still a lot of influence on just how life is lived and, you know, how we move about the world and things like that. And it has been hard. And I've been back for over 10 years now. And I feel like there are some days where I'm just like, I really would love to be in Abu Dhabi again, or I would really love to just move abroad again, because there's something different about just being in this space where, you know, you meet different parts of yourself that just don't get to show up on a day-to-day when you're in your comfort zone, doing the same monotonous routine or being around the same types of environments and not really seeing anything different, you know? So it is hard coming back. I can definitely attest to that myself. And I, like a couple episodes ago, I spoke with Tori McNeely. She actually wrote the Teach Abroad book and she talked about the same thing. She taught in Abu Dhabi, then she went and she taught in Nigeria. And it was the same experience of coming back and seeing how going from a collectivist type of community to individualist type of community, like you get sad. You're like, this sucks.
You know, I think in terms of like being abroad, being Black abroad specifically, and then coming back to the US and being Black, those are two different encounters as well. And that was eye-opening for me. And I think that is sort of what led to me feeling an overwhelm of emotions, because when I was abroad, yes, I was Black. I'm always Black wherever I am in the world, but I didn't feel this heaviness that is sometimes felt in the U.S.
Gotcha.
You know, like this.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to explain it, but we have to show up in a different way in the U.S. versus when we leave the U.S.
Right.
So if we're somewhere else. That feeling of having to prove myself wasn't there abroad. Coming back to the U.S., I feel like I have to work so hard and I have to show up as all these different people, you know, like.
Yeah.
So I think that is another layer of it as well.
That's a really interesting point because, you know, a lot of times most of us are concerned about what is it like to travel as a Black woman? What is it like to be in the world as a Black woman? And one of the things I think even with my network is recognizing or helping people to recognize that it's actually easier. It's exactly what you just said. It's actually easier to show up everywhere else in the world as a Black woman than it is to show up right here as a Black woman. I know it seems far-fetched, but I think it's something that is worth digging into. Like when we were in Madagascar, we had three different tour guides, and two of the three, I don't know if the third one did, he might have just not said it, but I kind of think he feels the same way. But two of the three said point blank to us, you are our first Black American guest. And one said, now I can see that you guys are different. And he gave us a whole bunch of stories about like the regular white Americans who had come out there. One guy who was said to him, like, that's what you're getting paid for, bud. And he had the voice on and I just cracked up. And he was like, but now I can see that you guys are different. You know, and he's like, you're smiling, you're having fun, you're trying to learn the language, because I was around and talking about Zagas, that means I'm Malagasy. Just being silly, you know. But it's interesting to see that, like, even in those small moments, they were like, wait a minute, American tourists, Black American tourists, aren't the tourists that we're used to. So now I can't really say American tourists anymore because they're different. We were taken care of so well. They looked out for us. One guy, he told us how to bargain. He was like, hey, when they tell you a price, cut it in three and then work your way to the middle. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. I've been traveling all this time. No one ever gave me that like rule of thumb. But they looked out for us. You know what I mean? And I thought that just felt good.
Yeah.
But then you come back and it's something every other day.
Exactly. And I think it's important, especially for people that are just for Black people that are just starting to travel, don't expect to be treated how you are in the U.S. abroad. Like,
yeah.
You can't go into these countries with a chip on our shoulder. Yes, there are things that have happened historically, but I've had nothing but great experience. And that doesn't mean that there won't be bad experiences in certain cultures. But I think when we bring race into it outside of the U.S., it can be a little bit of a disadvantage because people treat us well knowing that we're from America, but we're Black, you know?
Yeah. It's a very different energy.
It's actually interesting because even with that, just learning that I was treated differently because I was Black American in a good way.
They see you and they kind of see parts of themselves. I feel like they see the diaspora, right? We all have, or the majority of us have, this like shared history. You know what's going on in your home country, right? If you're from Colombia, if you're from Central America, you know, even some parts of Africa, you know the dynamics of politics of your country.
Yes.
And you know what it means for certain groups of people to not have the same as other groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, America is always seen as this like great white hope, right? Like this land of milk and honey.
Yes.
And then we show up and I think in their mind, it clicks like, oh, you are a group of people in a country, in a land that's politicized for whatever reason, but you're here, you're sharing my culture, and I can see that you're different. Yes. So I'm gonna look out for you because I know that you're here or you exist in somewhat of the same ways that I do. There might be some economic differences there and things like that, just based on a simple fact that we can travel. But I think that there is some level of knowing that's just like, I already know what you guys got going on. You want an empanada? You want something to eat? Because I got you.
That's actually so funny because I just traveled to Belize and I was so interested because they all look so different. Like they have it's such a melting pot. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to people that look just like me and they will look out for me. And then there were other people that were like, oh, where are you from? And saying I'm from America, it was a surprise to them. And I've noticed that like where a lot of places I travel, like they're surprised that we're from America. And it just made me feel like even just being in Europe, it made me realize like there is something that comes of being a Black American. I'm Black American. My family is from the United States. Mm-hmm. Played a big role in this country. But interesting to see what other cultures think is American when really Black culture is American culture.
Yeah. Because I remember being in Morocco in a store and this, like, the whole staff is like rapping it. I can't remember what was playing. It might have been a Drake song. And they knew every word. Yeah. The time I turned around and asked for a size small in a shirt, they were like, huh? And I was just like, wait a minute, you just rapped that whole song. You don't speak English?
Right, exactly. And we've influenced so many different parts of the world, which is so interesting.
For me,
it's like seeing that people love the NBA, they love hip hop, and they love fashion, a lot of fashion that is specifically tied to Harlem. It is so interesting to unpack that when I'm abroad.
So talk about that, because I know in your book you talked about sharing that with the students and being able to explain to them like parts of Black culture. So what were those conversations like?
It was very interesting because I'm Black American, they didn't quite understand that. Mm-hmm. I was the first Black American they've ever had. So there was a lot of questions, but I knew they were just curious.
Okay.
It just came from them not understanding, like, you have this skin color, but you're from America. That's not what we've learned. So it really gave me the opportunity to unpack some of the things that they've learned about America and teach them, like, okay, this is also American as well. I think being from New York, it just added a whole nother layer because they were so interested in New York. And it allowed me to teach them about hip hop. You guys love hip hop. It actually comes from people that look like me in the Bronx, in New York City. I taught them about fashion, about delis and getting a chopped cheese. And it was amazing. Like, I would do different virtual tours. And there's this one website I would use and I would take them on the train just so they could see like the experience of getting on a New York City subway.
And then
even just exposing them to like different parts of New York, because everyone thinks New York is New York City when you have beautiful places like the Hudson Valley that have all of this scenery and greenery. But it was very interesting. They asked a lot of questions about my hair and my culture and my family and the types of food that I eat. So I really could just show up authentically every day. And it just felt great to do that.
I love that, because we assume that because someone is enjoying our culture that they automatically understand it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they simply don't, especially as kids. You know, it just, hey, this song sounds fun. This whatever sounds fun, this dance move, this TikTok, this whatever sounds great, but they may still just not understand it. And I'm glad that you had that opportunity to be like, all right, let me tell y'all what this is, you know, because that bridges gaps.
Yeah. And I think that was why I enjoyed the opportunity so much, because I was really just going into it with no platform. I'm just supposed to be assisting teachers with English. And my role was to be the native speaker in the room.
Gotcha.
But the teachers gave me so much freedom to explore my culture and really dive into that because they were interested as well. It was really interesting teaching them about Black culture specifically because it varies depending on where you are in the U.S. Like,
yeah,
in the DMV, they do stuff that's different than how I would operate in New York. But then if you go to Houston, they have rodeo culture. And then if you go to California, they're wearing bandanas and Converse.
Yeah.
So getting into that, I learned a lot as well because I was like, wow, the U.S. really is so different depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
It was sort of like a blank canvas and I was able to make it mine.
It makes me think about like how many of our greats, James Baldwin, Maya Angelou, you know, left the U.S. And when they left the U.S., they were able to kind of like be on that looking glass on the outside and look back and say, this is what it looks like. And it sounds like even you having that experience of seeing what Black looks like in all these different places, because, you know, we always hear the term Black is not a monolith, right? But then ask people to define it and they're like, and they're not really sure how to articulate it. They know it, but how to articulate it. And I think stepping outside and now having to show someone else, like, this is what it looks like. But then stepping back and saying, but wait, New York is not like Atlanta, and Atlanta is not like the DMV, and the DMV is not like Houston, and Houston is not like LA. And recognizing that all of that exists, I think is something that's like, we don't do enough while we're here at home on a regular basis in order to give people grace on how they show up in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think really changed your perspective, I guess, both personally and professionally? Like when it was time for you to just be like, all right, I'm back. Now I'm a new person. What was that like for you?
I guess volunteering in Spain gave me a whole new level of confidence because I walked into a space where no one looked like me. And just by being myself, I was able to connect with people and inspire them. And I was accepted for who I was. And they didn't want me to be anything else. They wanted me to just be me. And that shifted how I show up just in life, like professionally and personally. I guess it really just reminded me of how important it is to be rooted in who I am, regardless of where I'm at. Like in the U.S., especially as a Black woman, there's often so much pressure to perform or prove your worth. But in Spain, I didn't feel like I had to carry that or even overextend myself. So I guess now just being back in the U.S., I'm choosing to show up as myself. And that means all of me, like the good, bad, the healing, nails undone, hair a mess. Tired. Yeah, just when I'm in the thick of it, figuring it out, like I'm still going to show up and give myself the grace because it's so interesting to me that in the U.S., I'm not giving grace when this is a country that my people are from, but I went to another country and I was given grace and I was allowed to be authentic, you know? So I sort of took that back with me.
I love that because it does ground you and it does make you realize like the depth or the core of who we are is not the situations that we are in. My biggest issue was trying to like fit back in and realizing, yeah, there is no fitting back in.
You hit that right on the nail because I feel like before I went to Spain, I felt like I was sort of trying to fit in these environments that weren't for me. And I was shrinking who I was in a lot of these spaces before I went to Spain. Honestly, I don't even know who I would be or who I would have become had I not have gone to Spain because there were so many factors that were keeping me tied to the U.S., but I guess just showing up for myself and saying yes, it really gave me the space to see myself outside of the noise of the U.S.
I love that. And I was going to ask you, like, who was Cameron before leaving from Spain? And then who was she after coming back from Spain?
I think the version of me before I left from Spain, I was very unsure. A year before I had left for Spain, I had officially entered into corporate and the education world. And I was working there for about a year before I went to Spain. And I was trying to navigate these spaces. And I really just felt like I couldn't show up as myself. I was very reactive and just constantly adjusting or trying to fit in or keep up. Because corporate world is a different animal and they don't teach you that. I guess I didn't realize how much I was dimming myself just to feel secure in these spaces. And then coming back, I'm 100% more sure of myself. I still have a lot to learn, but now I just have more intention. Like, I no longer feel the need to shrink myself or to second guess if I belong in certain spaces, because I know I do. Right. And if I don't, I don't force it anymore. I guess I'm just able to be grounded in who I am and what I want. And I've just stopped asking for permission to take up space.
Yeah. One of the biggest lessons in it all is like recognizing that everyone's kind of making it up as they go along. You know, especially when you've seen different things around the world and you hear how people talk about things that they really don't know about. And you're like, wait a minute now. I've been there. And then it starts to click that most people are doing exactly that. Just making stuff up.
And that is so funny you say that, because I think because people just make things up, it makes me feel a lot better because I'm being authentic.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If I don't know, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. And if I do know, I don't mind sharing. But the need to perform is not there anymore at all.
Yeah. I love that. Because you know what? It's like, prior to having that realization, you know, you hear people say things and they have so much bravado and so much in their chest as they say it, that you assume that they're right, right? You assume that they got it, that they're confident, you know, but confidence is a lie sometimes. Sometimes people wear confidence and it's a complete mask, you know? Yes. And when you start to have those realizations, you learn that one, confidence isn't loud. So to have that confidence, you don't need to be doing all of that. But then most importantly, as you start to see through the false confidence that a lot of people have, it just turns something on in you that's like, you know what? I got this. If I fail, I fail. If I succeed, I succeed. But I got this, because y'all around here making it up anyway. So
yeah. And I'm realizing now I'm not in competition with these people. It's
right.
Really just me. You know, this is my reality. I create the world that I want to live in. I don't need to compete with other people, or it's easier for me to just show up as who I am.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. All right. So tell us a story about a situation that you found yourself in Spain that really was like, all right, I am way out of my depth here. But at the same time, something that really was like an aha moment.
There were a lot of moments, and they weren't big moments either. They weren't like these extravagant things. I think a lot of those aha moments came from very small interactions. Like,
okay,
most of them were with my host family, because living with another family is already a big shift. But I guess what really would make it known, like, okay, you are doing something that is just not normal. We would go to like different family gatherings, like paella, or, you know, like we would just be around other people that were their family. And I would be surrounded by all of this laughter and all this conversation and the inside jokes. And a lot of the time I was not able to follow because of the language barrier.
Right.
I guess I would just be looking around and I would be like, wow, this isn't the family I grew up with, which wasn't a bad thing. It was just very unfamiliar. I knew they were my Spanish family and I knew they were warm and I knew they were welcoming, but it was still very new. No matter how long I was there, it always felt new because I'm looking around like, okay, this is different.
Like, I'm really here.
Yeah. And I guess that feeling of being both included in their family, but also being on the outside, that kind of stuck with me. It reminded me like, okay, I'm adapting, but I'm sitting in the discomfort, even though I'm deeply cared for by these people.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. It's just, I guess, just listening more and just being able to sit with those uncomfortable feelings. Like sitting with them, it made me realize, okay, you're out of your comfort zone, but it's okay. You know, because these people are not here to harm you. They're here for you.
You know what? And I think that's a really good lesson for a lot of people to learn, because a lot of times when you're out of your comfort zone and you're not able to sit with it, or you're not self-aware enough to sit with it, you tend to think that it's a bad thing. Or you tend to think that someone's against you, or there's a need for you to now tense up and puff up and, you know, be this aggressive person. And having the strength and the intelligence to sit with it and say, I'm uncomfortable, but I know these people aren't here to hurt me. I just have to sit with it. I think says a lot. It really speaks to the open-mindedness that you had to have to just be in that space and learn from it and not just be afraid of it, you know, not to stick with that fear. So that's pretty noble. That's I think that's pretty dope for you, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I guess just being there, I had to realize, like, I am in these people's home. They aren't in my home. Like, I am in their culture, in their house. I am around their kids, their family, eating their food. They've done nothing to me. So
absolutely,
you just have to go with it. So I was not like that before I left Spain. I mean, before I went to Spain, it really just has shifted. And I guess over there, they are pretty free as well. Like,
yeah,
I have a saying called no pasa nada, which is like, don't worry about it. And they say it.
Okay.
Like, nothing is that serious to them. So I guess, like, who am I to come bring my American self in their culture and be like all tense and doing the most?
Right. It's like, for what? Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think you brought back? Do you think you brought back some of that no pasa nada? Like, do you feel like you brought back some of that energy and how you move about the world?
Yes. But I think the experience as a whole, it pushed me more into my faith. It allowed me to just lean into the things that I don't know, you know?
Okay.
Because like I mentioned, like I didn't know how a lot of the days were going to go, because you know how you overhear the conversations like, oh, I'm going to the store and then later we're doing this. I couldn't grasp that. So like a lot of the time I was just showing up and like just going with it.
Gotcha.
So being okay with letting go of control, like just being able to be present was something I brought back. You know, like I guess I just stopped thinking like, what if this goes wrong? Or like I just trusted that it was for me. And if it was a bad experience, that was for me to learn from it. So I guess just releasing that control, like there's so much pressure to have everything planned out, but I couldn't control anything there. Like I was following these other people's lifestyle. I just learned to let myself flow.
Sounds like you've learned to just be, right? To just be in the world. Like we try to like hold on and control so many things. And it's like, for what? It's going to do what it's going to do anyway.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah,
and
I love that.
It's such a heaviness to carry.
Yeah, it is. It is. And when you're in a situation where you're willing to just let that happen, I don't think you can go back.
You know, I feel like now after being back in New York, I'm sort of like shifting back to like, okay, this is all annoying. But like when I first came back, I feel like it was off-putting to people how much I was just flowing and letting things go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think even now, because I don't rush anywhere. Like, I know I have a time to get there. I will get there by that time, but I don't rush.
I love that. I love that. It sounds like it really, like the experience really just shifted you. Do you think you'll go abroad and volunteer again? Or would you do something different?
That is a great question. I don't know if... So I feel like I got the experience of living with someone. And I feel like that's what I needed. But would I do it again? I feel like now I would want the experience of living on my own in another country. Just to see how that feels.
Okay.
Volunteering again? I think I definitely would. It's so easy.
Yeah.
You can just show up and things are taken care of for you and you can learn during the process. So yeah, I think I definitely would. I feel like this is a great way for me to travel.
That makes a lot of sense. I think the one question that people would definitely have is, how did you budget by volunteering? Because obviously you're not making money. Like you said in the beginning, you still have your car note, bills, you know, just life, stuff to take care of back home. But I know from the book, you were traveling, you were getting your life, like you were doing your thing. I mean, I'm not trying to be in your pockets for real, but to help somebody else, like what was that budgeting like?
So just to be real, I probably wasn't the most financially responsible when I was there.
Okay.
I said yes to the shopping, the excursions, the food, all of it, because I knew that was my priority going into the experience. But my situation was very unique because I had a remote job and I worked remotely while I was volunteering. So my days were very long. So I would teach in the mornings and then I'd have like a little break. And then at night I was doing my remote job. And that gave me the flexibility to travel without stressing too much about money day to day. And volunteering, I didn't have to worry about the cost of food or the cost of housing. So I could just use all of my money on traveling if I wanted to.
Nice.
I wasn't the most rigid budgeter, but I did save before I went to Spain. So I had money set aside just in case of emergencies, which gave me peace of mind. But for somebody that doesn't work remotely, there are a lot of different opportunities to teach English locally, especially to kids and even sometimes the parents, because they really value learning from native speakers. So that's a great way to earn extra money while you're there. You can get about 4 or 5 different kids consistently, and you'll be fine if you're volunteering and don't have to worry about food or housing. And a lot of kids in Spain specifically, they already know English. So they just want you to work with them on conversational skills, and they want to hear your accent and what words you're using versus how they're taught textbook wise. So yeah, I think that is a great way, because there were other people in my program that they were tutoring different children that they had met like through their host family or that they met from teachers from the schools they worked at. And they were able to travel as well. And once you're in Europe, it doesn't cost too much to travel either. So I think that was a benefit to me as well.
Yeah, that's what's up. So what advice would you give a Black woman who's like, I want to volunteer abroad, I don't know where to start, I don't even know if I should do it? Like, what is your golden advice that you would give them?
Well, number one, do it. Just do it. you don't have to think too much about it. And I think that's what I learned from doing it, because I just was like, all right, I had a bad day at work, I'm tired of this, I'm going to go do something else. But I think aside from that, go in with awareness, but just don't carry the weight, and use social media to your advantage. You know, get on TikTok, get on YouTube, and whatever people are sharing about their real life experience, use that to your advantage. I would say start on social media, because people are sharing the things they're doing every day abroad in all different types of countries, and then go from there and then decide what program is interesting to you. For me, I went through a third-party program, which was CIEE, and they handled all of the visas. They set up the placement for the school. They paired me with my host family. So I was sort of hands-off in the whole process. And that's the benefit you get from going through a third party. If you want to teach and you don't want to either pay for the program fees, you can go through NALCAP specifically, which is in Spain. And that is sort of cutting out the third party, and you're just applying directly to the Spanish government. The process is longer. You're doing all the paperwork on your own, but there are so many different tools for people to do this type of work for free. Don't just look at one person's page or two people's page. Look at all of them. Look at the authentic reviews of programs. Don't look at just the polished content from different program websites. You really want to engage with people. Like, talk to people, get in the comment section and ask them, how did you do this? What are your hours like? Really get into the social media community. And if something feels too good to be true, trust that feeling, because there are a lot of different programs, and there are people also on social media advertising programs that are not real. So I think really sourcing for that content, like dig for it. And that's a lot of what I did. And that's what brought me to CIEE, because there were so like almost too much information on social media about this program because it's huge.
Yeah, I think that's sound advice. That's sound advice, because like there are a lot of things that are popping up now and you just never know what's legit and what's not. Like I found my job in Abu Dhabi on Craigslist, and everybody just knew that I was about to like be rolled up in a carpet or a rug somewhere.
Really?
And I was like, yes. And the interview was in a hotel in downtown Atlanta. So that was like strike two. Like you're about. Like, what are you doing, Nadine? What are you doing? But something just felt normal. It was a company called Canada.com. It was a Canadian company. Okay. And even though they put the ad on Craigslist, they had a website, they had a LinkedIn page. The person looked real. AI wasn't a thing then. That was, this was like 2010. I was like, I'm going to just go for it. And here we are. Well, Cameron, this was an amazing conversation. And I know it's really going to help some people figure out like what they want to do. We had our Teach Abroad conversation a couple weeks back. And I think for some people who may not want to be teachers or who may not want to commit to teaching, volunteering abroad is another great opportunity. I know Spain is a great place, but there's so many other options that people have. Because I just want people to travel. Like, I'm just like, get out there and see the rest of the world. Like, we can't keep holding on to things we can't control when there's this big old world out here, you know? So I appreciate this conversation today, and I'm so glad that you were here to talk to us.
Yes, I think travel will show you who you really are. Sometimes in a way you don't even expect. Go in with an open mind and also an open heart. Like, be willing to feel everything, the discomfort, the joy, the moments of doubt, the breakthroughs. You know, like, don't go chasing the things you see on social media, because people will post the prettiest parts of travel, but travel can get very ugly and so many things can go wrong. So, but you know, that's where the growth is. I think that's where the transformation actually happens. So,
love that. I love that. That's sound advice. I agree wholeheartedly.
I've learned the most about myself as a traveler in those moments where I'm like, yo, where are all my cards at? I don't have a phone, or, you know, like, just goes wrong. And you can't even, like, plan for some of the things that go wrong when you travel. Some things are just like, wow, I wasn't even expecting that. And you just got to be resilient and figure it out.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, it is part of, like, really stretching yourself and seeing what you're capable of, you know?
It will test. Man. Yeah.
It will. It sure will. This was a great conversation. Well, y'all, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Traveling Black Women podcast. We had Cameron with us today, and she just dropped some amazing gems on how volunteering abroad, just being abroad in general, can really change your life. So tune into our next episode, and we'll see you later. Bye. Bye, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Traveling Black Women podcast. You can find us online at www.travelingblackwomen.com. And there you can find plenty more travel resources to help you plan your very next trip. We've got travel guides, we've got a blog, we've got our blog, and you just listened to our podcast. I look forward to seeing you around. Thanks for tuning in.